Welcome to the latest edition of the Elabra podcast. Joining me from the posh part of Madrid is Mary. And how are you doing?
I'm not doing because I'm not in the posh part of Madrid. I'm in a secret location.
First of all, I have to clarify for those listening. When I made a joke on last week's episode about the Amazon delivery man delivering a tutu, that was in fact a joke and did not happen whatsoever. Okay, I just want to clear that up, first of all. Second of all, this could be an exciting episode of the podcast because last Thursday, we spoke to the fantastic Spain Speaks led by Stuart, an Australian who's been in Madrid for 20 years. And we did the old plug for the podcast, the book, the tour, the virtual tour, and our cookbook that we've released as well. Mary cooks 25 delicious Irish dishes as cooked by a Spanish woman.
They'll be asking us about this next week.
Yeah, generally, right, he uploads around 4 or 5, not that I've been, you know, watching or anything like that. So I will be periodically refreshing his YouTube page to see if it pops up today. So it could happen over the course of this podcast that we get confirmation that it's online. And that's pretty amazing because, you know, we did it on Thursday. I thought, okay, here it comes Friday. It didn't. I was like, okay, here it comes Saturday. And it didn't. And then Sunday. And now we're here on Monday. So let's see if our little hearts get broken or we have to wait a little bit longer for our big
this
interviews.
Sounds exactly like the end of confinement, you know?
Thought
it was Friday, but it wasn't. Saturday, but it wasn't.
Yeah, well, it's a funny one, but first of all, we're doing another interview tomorrow, but let's focus on the one we did last week as well. It's our first time doing an interview in English for the book, and the first time we've really done an interview about the tour and everything as well. So it was kind of cool, no, to be talking about that stuff in English, you know. Finally, I get to talk in English about these things.
Yes, you were very happy because we're always doing interviews in Spanish, and this time it was in English, so it was me suffering more than you.
Well, next time we do the stuff, I will practice my two new phrases, tal y como yo creo, and través de lo cual, you know, if you're a Spanish speaker, you know what that means. If not, don't worry about it too much. And then we have a big interview tomorrow as well, with another English language platform, this time a magazine. So Spain Speaks is a YouTube channel, and he does good stuff. And then we're going to talk to the Madrid Metropolitan magazine tomorrow about the same things, the book, the tour, the virtual tour, the cookbook, the podcast, all that stuff. Now, the virtual tour was your brainchild, and it's been doing well. So you put it on Google Earth, our tour lab, PS. I don't think we've spoken about that in the podcast, have we?
I think we have.
Okay, well, never mind.
On YouTube, so... It's breaking up. I can't hear you. Well, to be honest, they can check it out in our other wonderful interview. So we can leave them with, you know, the mystery.
Yeah, we don't need to leave links to that.
Diversify all our, you know.
Yeah. You also mentioned the end of confinement. So, yeah. So, most of Spain is in phase one. Some of Spain's actually in phase two, believe it or not. With Spain and Madrid and Barcelona, we are stuck in phase 0.5, which means that some small shops can open. You can go there without an appointment. If there's a funeral, God forbid, I think 10 or 12 people can attend it. Strangely, though, even though you can play golf, you can't play paddle because paddle involves 4 people. So the numbers are how do I say it? They're going down anyway. 86 on Saturday, the first time in 2 months under 100 and the lowest in 2 months anyway. So is this the week that Madrid finally passes to phase one? That's a question.
Well, I'm reflecting. Yeah. It should be on Monday. It should be next Monday, I'm pretty sure. I mean, you know, it was closed this week, but not quite there. Not so much because of the figures, but to do with the preparedness in case there's another wave. Or things start getting bad when we return to sort of like normal or the new normal, as it's being called.
Yeah, yes. One of my students, you call it dystopian. You said it was like 1984 or Brave New World by Aldous Huxley, this idea of the new normal. It's like this kind of political speak. But it's weird because obviously you're in Madrid, but if you're sequestered in your house, I wasn't aware for the first couple of days, because I switched off a little bit from it, that there's been these protests all over the city, particularly in Barrio Salamanca as well. Now, if you do watch our Spain Speaks interview, you'll notice I dodge a political hot potato, and Mary was very proud of me because I don't always do that. But don't worry, I can see the look of concern on your face. I'm not going to get into it either on this podcast. I'm not going to rattle any cages or, you know, disturb the hornet's nest. But generally, you know, without going too much into it, but a lot of people are not happy that Madrid has been kept away from phase one. Now, on one side of the coin, you could think that's maybe a little bit silly, perhaps, because if we rush it, we might risk a second wave. But then on the other hand, you have economic considerations. Now, for the benefit of the listener, this is my favorite part of the podcast, when I start talking about something and I can see Mary's face, which is a very clear indication to stop talking about it. So that's what we're going to do.
No, it's because I thought I was just praising myself, because I thought you were going to ask me. So I was just like, you know, trying to breathe in and breathe out before giving my answer, so I don't sound like a polygon. But it's a topic that really, like, you know, stresses me out. So
we won't focus too much on it because we've other fish to fry in this podcast. But without going too much into it, but I mean, do you see it clearly as an issue, or do you think it's something that's wrapped up in a lot of complexity and it's very difficult to determine what the right thing to do is here, you know, whether people should be protesting or not, or whether we should go to phase one or not, you know?
Well, I think they're two completely different things. I mean, regardless of whether we should go or we shouldn't go into the following phase, then, you know, these kind of protests at present, they're not right. I mean, I say with all the latest, it's like there's no two ways about it. They're not right, you know. We're still in a... Everybody has to pull in, whether you agree with it or not.
I think they're very right. You know, they're quite conservative.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. The silence accounting for, like, you know, the feedback. The return. Yeah, okay. So they are like far right and no right at all. Because, yeah, I mean, as I was saying, like, we all have to pull in at the moment, and the situation is what it is, and the rules are what they are. And, you know, it's just no use. There are still a lot of people dying, and there are still a lot of health workers completely overwhelmed by the whole situation. And whether you think we should pass or not, I don't think it's the moment to be protesting. Even, like, you know, this whole business of, like, banging the pans and all that, which I hate as well. But at least, you know, people are doing that from the, let's say, comfort zone homes, keeping social distances and keeping all the rules. You know what I mean? So at least they're keeping the rules. So fair enough. You might not agree, or it might be annoying because the noise is really annoying, or you might think it's antisocial, but at least, like, yeah, fine. It's a way of protesting that doesn't put people in danger. By the minute you're doing it in the street, not keeping the distance, you know, no masks, and just staring, you know, staring things just because you don't want to. Because this is the thing, that this is the key thing. You know, it's not the people that have lost their jobs. Like, it's not the people that are struggling to feed their kids that are protesting. That's the key thing. If it was like people that haven't been given the help from the Spanish government that is due, but and many people haven't received it yet. So for example, like that's a motive to be stressed. People that have to go to the food bank or people that are relying on other neighbors giving them food, like in some parts of Madrid, like we've seen there's huge queues with neighbors like feeding other neighbors. I mean, that's like quite the drama. So you would understand those people complaining, but these people are not them. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
Anyway, you say you didn't want to go too much on this, so.
I couldn't stop your tirade. You're foaming at the mouth there. No, I think it's interesting what you say. A couple of points we can mention as well. I'm not sure if it's happening in other countries, but in Spain there are in some neighborhoods queues for food banks and things like that for people who have been affected. I saw a video of a guy who was walking past one and was on the news, and he was just like, "This is incredible. This isn't Venezuela, and this is happening here," kind of thing. And then you mentioned the masks as well, which is interesting because as far as like the health card, if you have a health card, you can get a mask from the pharmacy, but you only get one, isn't that correct? Just one mask, no?
Oh. Yes, you get one, which you're supposed to use for a maximum of 8 hours. So yeah, I mean, it's pretty pointless, but
Don't worry. Well, here's the thing, though. There's the last thing we can say about it. Is that because I've heard so many, I mean, there's so much conflicting information going out there, because I've heard, you know, that you can use the mask and then you can put it into like a paper bag and use it again. And it's good for like 10 hours, you know. So, yeah, there's a lot of conflicting information out there, and even people debating whether masks are better than gloves or if gloves are better than masks and things like that. And now, even in the news the other day, people were saying that it hasn't been proven that the coronavirus stays on surfaces. So it has to be kind of discovered as well. So the more you know, the less you know is the conclusion. And also it's hard to keep track because you get fatigue as well following it. But well, that's the coronavirus. This is potentially the last coronavirus quarantine epidemic COVID-19 special. Fingers crossed indeed. So moving on from that, we want to talk about a very serious and sober subject, and that is of course beards. And beards have been a huge part of our life this week, because we've written two articles in the blog about it. We interviewed Colin Murphy, who is a personal trainer and a beard entrepreneur, which is to say he has a beard oil company called the West Beard West Cork Beard Company. And he was very kind to sit down with me over WhatsApp and talk about his two businesses. And then off the back of that, Mary has also written a very interesting blog article about beards in general. So we start with Colin. Colin's an interesting man. I met him when he was leaving Spain and teaching and all of that, and he wanted to become a personal trainer, which he now is. But also what's very fascinating about his story is that he went back to Ireland, he's growing his beard out for the first time, it got itchy, he tried some products, didn't find any that he liked, and remarkably, you know, because a lot of people are in that position, I think, well, I could do this better, or wouldn't it be better if they did it this way, and, you know, he had that thought, and he ran with it. He actually set up his own company, the West Cork Beard Company, and he tested it in his house, made it, and then sent it off to the UK for testing, and got approved and all that. And now it's a pretty successful brand, and it's a great resource for the man looking for tender yet masculine TLC for their beards. He has a YouTube channel as well.
For instance.
that was really cool, because like that really like blew up, shall we say, on Twitter. A lot of people read it, and it got retweeted and all that stuff, and people seem to have an interest in it, and getting traffic from Facebook for it as well. So I think people are interested to see beards. Beards seems to be very popular, more than we would expect. Also, how an Irish guy is doing with the quarantine and how businesses are faring with that, which is also the subject of our interview tomorrow as well. So that's very current and has a great cachet. But again, I think personal grooming for men and beards has always been popular. But now more so, I think, during the quarantine, because men can experiment more with their look, perhaps. And if you can't grow a beard, transplants are available, which you discovered in the course of your research, and you've discovered there's actually a wealth of information about beards, going back to Cú Chulainn, the great Irish warrior, Indian dancing, and also involving Spain and the Armada and England and things like that, and Norse mythology. So many juicy things. Just kick it off there, Mary. Go on, tell us something.
You said it pretty much all. No, it is very interesting links, not only throughout history, but also with botany, so with plants and trees, and how beards and bodily hair relates to that in mythology, and what beards represent in different performing traditions. And yeah, just some historical anecdotes, beard-related historical anecdotes.
You're saying about Cú Chulainn, for example, that some warriors didn't want to fight him in these epic warrior battles because he didn't have a beard. So he wasn't seen as masculine enough to engage in combat. And then with a woman blowing in his ear, convincing him to put some blueberries or something on his face, it's like Monty Python or something, he puts his fake beard on. And he engages in combat and wins and all those things. And also, I mean, the whole thing as well is hilarious, because you go into a linguistic analysis of how things are related to beards and things like that. And you mentioned your own brother and how he, what was he called in Spanish? Yeah.
Oh, Inverbe, yeah. He was called poor him. Yeah. And he didn't know what he meant. I mean, I think it's a great way of, finishing an argument, and if somebody, you're just in like this endless argument with a member of your family, and then they call you something, some 16th century insult that you don't understand, or even a word that you don't know the meaning of, and that's the end of the argument.
The whole point is though, he was engaging in a forthright discussion with your father, intellectual debate, and your father called him that, which means you don't have a beard, as in, you're not even a man. What are you doing at the man's table exchanging ideas with me? And he walked away in shock, primarily because he never heard that word before. And he looked it up and then, he extracted the meaning from that, which is absolutely incredible. This idea that if you can't grow a beard, your opinions ain't worth a hill of beans, basically. And that was the kind of foundational story of this whole article. You also talk very interestingly about Norse mythology and things like that, and the relationship between botany and beards, which we did touch upon as well in the Cullen thing that we mentioned. So can you take it up again and explain more, since you are the author of this article?
Well, okay, before I move into the Norse mythology thing, there's a funny thing related to what you were saying about your opinion of being counted, which is to do with Ireland. And basically, it was kind of like pretty much a legal requirement to be considered the same way as here, the legal age would be 18, in other places 21. The legal age would be determined by having this, for a man over there, having this what was called encircled beard, so like a beard that covered your face properly, then you were like a complete, like a full legal subject, considered for, whatever wills or whatever it was. So it even when it wasn't just like a social thing, it was even like a proper legal thing. So that's quite interesting. And with regards to Norse mythology, it was quite a similar concept. There was another hero as well that had the same issue as Cú Chulainn, trying to fight their enemies, fearless for him. And beards feature a lot as plants, because in fact all plants are supposed to come from the hair of giant ymirs. The giant image that is a famous mythological character in Norse mythology.
Okay, and you mentioned in the article, it feels like I'm interviewing you, you mentioned in the article that they don't mention his beard because he had the same beard problem as Cú Chulainn. So presumably it was his body hair and things like that. And also, you go on a mad tangent about how different parts of your body grow hair independently. So you could have black hair and a red beard and all of that, which is fascinating stuff. And also, you mentioned...
I knew you were like that thing.
You mentioned as well Spain. Now, obviously, Spain had a flotilla ready to go to England and engage them in combat there, you know, in what later became known as the Spanish Armada. And which is also an interesting episode for another reason, because it was linked to big news this year, actually, where I think some English historians came out and said the victory against the Spanish there was actually greatly inflated and was a type of fake news. And you know what? We might have written a book called Fake News, which is available on Amazon, and also got another 5-star review there from a person we don't know, which is great. That's another tangent. But you mentioned beards and things like that. And Drake, the pirate Drake, as he's known in Spain, he boasted about going over and singeing the beard of the Spanish king. Why was that kind of a loaded phrase? Why was that significant, phrasing it that way?
Well, in fairness, I think it was to do with the fact that because he came all the way to Cádiz to try and destroy the ships, which were already part of the Spanish Armada, by the way. He was just like, a little flotilla, because flotilla is like, you know, suggest that it's a very small set of ships, but he thought that he could destroy them before they went over and attacked England, which in the end wasn't really... He destroyed some of them, but he wasn't very successful in what he wanted, which was stopping like a further attack. And yeah, I think what he was getting at was that he got very, very close to the heart of Spain. So like he was like almost like, you know, he was so close to the king, he was singeing his beard. But to me, and I might be wrong, you know, it was just pretty obvious that that was also a way of like mocking him. You know, it's like you're even able to burn his beard, and you know, it's kind of like this sort of like macho battle between the two of them.
It's like, instead of who's got the biggest, well, you know, it's like who's got the hairiest beard, for example. Because you mentioned in the article, like this was an attack, a verbal assault on his virility and his manliness, you know, like I'll take his beard from him, for example, and things like that. And you also finish by talking about the bearded ladies in Victorian England. More specifically, as we touched upon in the previous episode, you speak about Indian dancing and the significance of painted beards in those performances. Again, Mary, can you enlighten us with your insight into this?
Well, the other day we talked a little bit about Kathakali, that we said it was performing art that mixed dance with theater, and it's really ancient. I mean, some of the principles are already referred to in like texts, you know, in the second century and beyond. And it's a performing art that requires lots of makeup and three color coding to differentiate different types of characters. So some of them, well, most of them are supernatural. So you have like supernatural monkeys, you have demons, chief demons, and each one of them has a different color and a different set of props. It's quite an interesting thing because you tend to think that they're masks, that they wear masks. First, because there are other cultures that, you know, for things like harvest and things like that, they wear these big masks with lots of hay and things like that to portray beards. But in this case, it's not really a mask as such, but the masks are kind of like representing the colors of the face, and the props that they use are sold as souvenirs. So those kind of, or at least for me, those two things mixed in my head and made me think that they were wearing masks. I think some forms of theater also wear like, you know, proper masks, but a lot of the Kathakali characters rely on lots of makeup. And I know from one of my teachers that this process of putting makeup on can last hours and hours, so 7-8 hours just you know, putting makeup on to be able to do this performance.
Okay, fantastic. So I would say you should go tea and see it or read it. And I can't think of any puns with goatee or beards or whatever, but it's a damn fine job, Mary. Well done. Very interesting tour around the history and mythology of Ireland.
Thank you, Wes.
And beards and India and things like that. So I've heard a rumor that your next blog article is going to be about earlobes or something like that. The significance of earlobes in different kids. So don't say this anymore.
This was completely accidental, but I think the best articles or the best things to research just happened by chance. So, you know, it was a combination of obviously you doing the interview with Colin and me reading this book about traditional dances of India, and I came across these characters that had different color beards, so I found that quite peculiar. And then I thought, well, there might be something interesting here. Maybe there's something to do with Irish mythology. And then, you know, what better than finding there's actually an episode about Cuchulainn, something to do with a beard. I mean, that's exactly what you want. So it all, like, you know, kind of developed from there.
I'm a big believer in that. It's very Jungian. And I've often found as well when I've been researching blog articles that things that you learn independently from each other somehow unify in a kind of glorious way and become part of the fabric of a story. It's amazing stuff, really.
Yeah, because I've been translating so much stuff about plants, so it was quite funny as well, because obviously that kind of like started tying in with names of plants, having the word beard and all these things.
I've been researching plants as well, and I have come across plants also that have the word beard, and also I've been researching this ancient Indian herb called I have it on a Word document here. Ashwagandha. You know ashwagandha? You heard about that?
No.
Basically, what is it? It's ashwagandha is like an ancient herb that's been used for millennia, basically, in treating different things, and it's part of like this alternative healing thing in kind of this Indian context. I don't know. I don't want to say too much about it in case I'm seemingly endorsing it for its health giving properties. It's quite speculative. That's all I could say. What I want to say is like beards are interesting because, you know, you do, well, first of all, I didn't think we'd be doing a podcast about beards, but here we are. Secondly, yes, there was Internet Day, I think. So, you know, it could be national, international
Today's
beard
museum
day, whatever.
Day. International Museum Day, which is actually very relevant for us.
Exactly. Virtual tour, link in the description. I think people get surprised when they learn these things, like beards had a symbolism, which is strange for two reasons, because I think there's so much cultural and social connotations around the things that we do or how we dress or how we look, you know. And I mean, in certain religions, I mean, I think in the Orthodox, if you're very Orthodox and Jewish, I think the beard has a significance there as well. And with the Sikhs, it's what they wear on top of their heads. And I think even for Muslim men, the beard is significant as well. So, I mean, we are aware in that context that this has this type of importance. But then when we are not thinking about that context and beards, we kind of forget that there is that history behind it. And that shouldn't be surprising, really, you know. So it's quite, so you're doing good work. You're bringing back appreciations for things that shouldn't be underappreciated and shedding new light in things. It's funny because I think like if Blind Boy on his podcast did this story like a day or a week later, there'd be the fucking hundreds of blog articles about it and people discussing it, become a thing, you know. So we'll measure that on Google and see if we had that same effect. I think not, though, however. I guess that's pretty much everything for this episode. So what we can do is we can do the usual hawking. So would you like to start hawking?
Hawking. As in where you can find us.
Yeah, that kind of stuff, yeah.
Okay, so you definitely go and read the article about the beers on IrishSliceOfMadrid.com and the interview with Colin Murphy. Oh, beers as well, because it's the theme of the week. And also you can find us on Twitter at ElArpaOne or on Facebook ElArpaMedia or in all good bookshops online and in store if they are open in your country. Or in your province, because it's available in Spain for our fame news.
Okay, very good. And also, we are on Patreon, link in the description as well. So if you like what we do, please consider supporting us. Something's a token gesture if you want, but don't worry, if you don't, we'll still be here doing this stuff. And that is pretty much everything. So wherever you are, confronting this COVID-19 epidemic, stay safe, stay happy, and tune in to the ElArpa Media Podcast whenever you can. This is me from Madrid saying goodbye.
And me also in Madrid saying bye.